unity or pro-life?
Whoa.
Does it have to be either, you know?
Whoa.
Dude, Tim Keller, what is wrong with Big Eva?
My
we're gonna find out goodness, today.
Big Eva.
Are we going there?
Yep. And we're going to get to William Barr today. We also have
Greenfield.
No, I want to get I want to get Bill on the show.
Okay.
Barr.
But we have Ben Greenfield.
And then we have Ben Greenfield.
That's a good substitute.
On the show.
Right.
Mr. Fitness.
He's kind of like the Attorney General.
He's like Iron Man Fitness.
Do I need to change my uniform then?
Oh.
We should.
I need to get some gym clothes on.
We should get some tank tops.
Do you have cross-ballistic tank tops?
A bunch of fat guys in tank tops with this Ben Greenfield guy.
Why are you body shaming me?
Dude, I'm large, man.
I want a sweatband. An 80s style sweatband that says has cross politics.
I'm with that. Make notes.
Can we do that? Do we have something called Rowdy Christian Merch?
We have rowdychristianmerch.com. You guys can go there and get all your merch. Get ready for the conference. Actually, I don't know if it'll be shipped in time now because the COVID's just so slow these days.
You still COVID to speed up.
Actually, if you buy merch, I think tonight or tomorrow, Monday morning, I think it'll be okay because you still have a week and a half.
Can you get these hats?
You can get these hats. I love these hats. You can get them on our website. They're fantastic. We also are going to have, of course, a lot of merch at the conference.
Yes.
We're going to have hats, shirts.
We are?
Yeah, yeah. Coffee.
At the conference?
Coffee and...
Post mill coffee?
Yeah. Sovereign roast.
Sovereign roast coffee.
We're literally taking we're only bringing 100 bags of coffee. It's not very much.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, not very much.
We're going to have to ration but that
the problem
stuff
is,
out.
The problem is with coffee, it's a pound a bag.
Right.
And so we're bringing 100 bags. That's 100 pounds.
Wow. Hmm.
On the airplane, and they're going to charge us, you know, $100 to bring that bag on the plane.
Okay.
I mean,
it's pretty
unbelievable.
Dripology.
Dripology.
There you go.
So bring your money.
Yeah. And you'll get a pound of coffee in Franklin.
Gold, hallelujah. Gold, hallelujah.
You heard I said Franklin. Franklin, Tennessee.
Yes.
Franklin, Tennessee. We had to move. We'll get more into this in a new segment, but we had to move from Nashville, Tennessee because the mayor's cray cray there.
He's in the news.
And just 20 minutes away, we're
just
going to Franklin.
Did the mayor
we're in this
our
really
conference.
Cool indoor soccer arena. They actually call it the Franklin Arena.
TOA Sports Performance Center.
Yep. Yep.
Don't confuse it with the Franklin Ice Arena.
It's actually the same thing.
What?
Because they just haven't changed the name up.
It's a different address.
Oh, really?
It's a different address.
Well,
than
it used to be the Franklin Ice Arena. Now it's the Franklin.
Okay.
I mean, anyways,
check the website.
We got more. Check the website for it's 215 Gothic Court in Franklin. Yeah. There's also new hotel, updated hotel.
And the hotels are like right there.
They're,
right,
they're close. They're within
like
a walking
a block
distance.
Or two?
I think they're more like a half a mile or something. But still.
Oh. Well, if you're Ben Greenfield, that's not too far away.
Get your exercise in.
Yeah. It'll help me.
But you're not going to make me walk, are you?
Probably. Yeah, probably. Hey, guys, support Rowdy Christian Media. We can't thank enough of all our club members that have come on board this year.
Right.
Silver, hallelujah. Gold, hallelujah. Good, hallelujah.
Stop that. Yeah, stop man. That.
What you just said is one of the most insane.
Our club members are our lifelines. And you're the reason why we're able to grow, why we're able to add all these other shows on our network, how we're able to even be able to get
just
the foundation of starting a conference this year. We're gonna have 800 to we're gonna have a lot. We're packed. We're actually I hate to say this, but the last registration opportunity and deadline is tomorrow night at 12 p.m.
That's
12 a.m.
That's
midnight.
That's Monday
midnight.
Monday night.
We got to close it off.
September 21.
Guys, we thought we were going to be happy to have 400 people there.
Four.
And now you guys.
We were. Look.
David and Toby were like, hey, man, we get 150 people there. We're
that's
happy.
That's pretty amazing.
But we got to cut off registration because
we're full.
We're full.
So
we're full.
We already we announced last week, I think, that we were gonna take 50 more.
Yeah.
And that happened in like a day and a half.
And we're like, oh, man, we were like that. We were like that, totally. And then we were like, can we squeeze a couple more rows of chairs in? And we're like, we think we can.
Yep.
So, but this is it. This is the deadline.
Yep.
Monday, September 21st at midnight, the registration's closed.
Yep, we're
sorry,
done.
Sorry. We love you. We love you.
We'll see you next year when we have an arena that'll fit 2,500 people.
Yeah,
so that's what we're doing next year.
We're going to do it next year.
But the great news is...
What's the great news?
You can sign up for a club membership and live stream the conference. So if you can't actually make it to the conference because... we're booked to capacity.
We're slammed.
You can definitely sign up for a club membership. That's the only way that you'll be able to actually watch the conference.
Yeah. Only club members.
To club members. So
sign up for club membership and that get way, access to all the talks.
It'll be live streamed and then, of course, recorded after.
Are you going to be like running around with a phone or with a camera, like doing other stuff? Too?
I got some bazookas to shoot this conference with.
I was going to say, you got
300 to 800 lenses.
This is not just going to be like your normal, like, oh, look, there's a guy talking.
No, it's kind of going to be normal. It's just going to be
I'm also going to be doing my own content that I'm going to be uploading.
Yeah, that's right.
To the membership portal.
It's going
to
look amazing.
So all club members get live stream access. And then, of course, we'll package and upload all the recorded
camera,
content.
I'm going to take my camera behind the stage.
There we go.
I do want to do that.
And I'm going to go up into the speaker's lounge, and I'm going to be like talking to people and be like, hey, Glenn Sunshine. Hey, yeah. David Bonson. Hey, yeah. Jeff Durbin.
That stuff will be up in the club portal, but it won't be live streamed. That stuff will be
there. Okay. But
okay. So
why
Nashville?
Why are we going to Franklin?
Nashville reshut down at the beginning of August.
Right.
And the mayor used one of the primary reasons was because the restaurants and bars had opened back up and people had been coming in from out of town and they had this big, massive COVID outbreak. So he reshut down.
What was the massive outbreak? How many people do you know?
Well, thousands is what they were claiming.
Okay.
And so he reshut down at the beginning of August. And so we thought, hey, they're going to reopen by middle of September. And so we don't need to do anything right now. But they didn't reopen. Every Thursday, I think the mayor does a COVID update or whatever, and he doesn't reopen. Tennessee's fine.
Yeah.
It's Nashville that's the problem. Right. The mayor's liberal. He raised taxes 34% this last year. It's unbelievable.
How is he still mayor?
Is he woke?
It's crazy. Okay. So he shuts down all the bars and restaurants saying, hey, we need to reshut down Nashville, and then we're planning our conference. Well, now, as of last week, I had to cut bait. We couldn't wait to see if the mayor was going to be predictable or open up by October 1st.
He said that if we came on our knees and we begged Master, he might let us.
Uh-huh. He got the wrong one.
Yeah. And we were like, we don't do that.
I had representatives and senators in Nashville trying to help us be able to have our conference.
John DeBerry.
I pulled all the strings I could. We couldn't. So we moved to Franklin. It's about 20 minutes, 25 minutes from the airport. Nashville's about 20 minutes from the airport. Franklin's about 25 minutes from the airport. So
hopefully it doesn't
cause any consternation or problems for the people who are already coming and have to reschedule hotels. Nashville ain't getting our money, and we literally are spending about $8,000 more to move over to Franklin. The mayor freaking owes me reparations.
Horrible. What is this stuff?
He owes me reparations. This broke this past week. On the shenanigans that are going on. I'm getting mad already talking about it. The shenanigans. Give me a stinger. Shenanigans.
I think you just did it.
Check this out.
New stinger.
Tonight, coronavirus cases at Nashville bars and restaurants may have been so low, the mayor's office and the Metro Health Department decided to keep it a secret.
Ooh. Emails between the mayor's senior advisor and the health department reveal only a partial picture, but what is in them is disturbing. Fox 17 News' Dennis Ferrier has the story.
The discussion involves the low number of COVID-19 cases coming out of bars and restaurants, and most disturbingly, how to keep it from the public.
On June 30th, contact tracing was giving a small view of coronavirus clusters. Construction and nursing homes causing problems, more than 1,000 cases traced to each category. But bars and restaurants, a total of just 22 cases. Leslie Waller from the health department asked, quote, "This isn't going to be publicly released, right? Just info for mayor's office?" "Correct. Not for public consumption," answers the mayor's senior advisor, Benjamin Eagles. Mm. 1 month later, the health department is asked point blank about the rumor that there are only 80 cases traced to bars and restaurants. Tennessean reporter Nate Rao asks, quote, "The figure you gave of more than 80 does lead to a natural question. If there have been over 20,000 positive cases of COVID-19 in Davidson and only 80 or so are traced to restaurants and bars, doesn't that mean restaurants and bars aren't a very big problem?" Metro Health Department spokesman Brian Todd asks 5 Metro Health Department officials the question, "Please advise how you recommend I respond." The name at the top of the response is clipped off, but you may find the answer unacceptable. Quote, my two cents, we have certainly refused to give counts per bar because those numbers are low per site. We could still release the total, though, and then a response to the over 80 could be, quote, because that number is increasing all the time and we don't want to say a specific number. Neither the health department or the mayor's office would confirm the authenticity of the emails. But Councilman Steve Glover
later
asked a Metro staff attorney to inquire. Here's the official answer. I was able to get verification from the mayor's office and the Department of Health that these emails are real, answered the staff attorney. Glover says this adds up to a cover-up.
They're fabricating information. They've blown their entire credibility now, Dennis. It's gone. I don't trust a thing they say going forward. Nothing.
Glover says he has been contacted by an endless stream of downtown bartenders, waitresses.
Well, you get the idea.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable that they basically, they reshut down because they thought the cases were coming from the bars and all the people and all the tourists coming in from out of town. So they reshut down Nashville and all this. I mean, we are being hoodwinked in all this.
So, you know, the mayor did release a statement Thursday afternoon responding to this story and released emails from the day before June 29th in which there was some discussion about whether they could release how they could release data.
Uh-huh.
And they're talking about if there's only two or three cases at a particular bar, they're concerned about breaking HIPAA laws.
Yeah.
So HIPAA laws are things that used to matter, but don't anymore because everybody can ask you why you're not wearing a mask. And if it's for medical reasons, they can make you tell you them what the medical reason is, even though that's illegal.
Yeah. Right.
It's illegal. But they in this back and forth in the same, maybe the same thread or a similar thread between the same offices, that's the discussion there. The problem though, so they release this, the mayor's office releases this and says, see the context.
We're transparent.
Means that we were concerned about HIPAA laws.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what they're trying to claim. The problem though is that this is from the day before, and that's not at all what is happening in the emails on the 30th that are released, much less a month later.
July 29th.
August. I think it's in August, a month later, when they actually are asked point blank about how low the numbers are, and the guy says, "How should I respond?" Nobody then says, oh, because of HIPAA, you need to add them all together. Yeah. No, it's clearly having to do with we want to make sure they don't get the idea that this is not a threat.
The question is, everybody there should be fired.
Everybody
there should be fired. The question is, who is the person that fires these people?
Do you say it, everybody?
Everybody. And they should make them all street sweepers. I mean, like, seriously, it's like our governor needs to step down, become a street sweeper. Our mayor needs to step down, become a street sweeper. Nashville's mayor needs to step down and become a street sweeper.
But there's another problem here, too, is that we've given too much control to them.
Yeah.
They should have never been able to shut you down.
Never.
The person who is actually, they should have been said, oh, look at this. The mayor's still trying to figure out, I'm sorry, how do you want your burger? Right? They should have kept going. Yeah, they should just kept operating.
Yeah, yeah,
and because, but isn't God's way so much better? Let's say there were 22 cases. Guess who gets quarantined? 22.
Yeah.
How many hundreds of thousands of people still get to operate and function in the city?
Everybody else.
And they mama in now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
but here's the thing, too, is Nashville is full of slaves.
Yeah. America is.
Right? And America's full of slaves.
Yeah.
Right? You don't do anything unless massa says you can.
Yeah,
that's right.
And that's what they're doing.
Well, and to be specific on this, you know, the businesses have been dictated to by the government. The government's been dictating to the businesses how to operate, how to function. They got to have a restaurant license. Yeah. They got to have a license for liquor. They got to have a license for beer. They got to have a license for an occupancy license.
Yeah, we've been slaves for a minute.
Look, this for a long time. But we don't make the connection between some of these little, you know, minor, you know, enslavements.
But this is why God's law is so important. Like, this is when we talk about positive law and negative law.
Exactly.
Well, as soon as you start adding positive law into here, then you become a slave. It means that you are a child and you need to be parented over.
Right.
But negative law, it's like, okay, this is the things you can't do. Go enjoy everything else in here.
Yeah. Right.
Right. That's and so what we have done is let the government spank our kids. It's the same thing.
Right.
Hey, they get to come in your house. They get to tell you how many kids you get to have.
Yep.
They get to tell you how you spend
your occupancy.
How many
inches between each stud?
That's right.
How many sheetrock screws?
They're in your business.
Yep.
And we let them. We invited them.
Yep. And we need to get over it. I mean, I can't believe how much I've appreciated Bill Barr this last year.
Yeah.
I've never really followed him that much until actually this past year. I mean, I already always heard good things about him.
He's an OG.
But Bill Barr's my boy. Check out this video.
Putting a national lockdown, stay-at-home orders is like house arrest. It's, you know, other than slavery, which was a different kind of restraint, this is the greatest intrusion on civil liberties in American history.
Barr suggested that politicians, not medical professionals, should guide the public during the pandemic.
The person in the white coat is not the grand seer who can come up with the right decision for society. A free people makes its decision through its elected representative.
In the wide-ranging discussion, Barr also criticized the Black Lives Matter movement.
Proposition, who can quarrel with the proposition Black Lives Matter? Right. But they're not interested in Black Lives. They're interested in props. A small number of Blacks who were killed by police during conflict with police, usually less than a dozen a year, who they can use as props to achieve a much broader political agenda.
I was just saying the slavery.
Yeah.
What did he say?
He said that the intrusion now with the lockdown outside of slavery
is the greatest single threat to civil liberties.
Yeah, but is it not, though?
Right.
And I don't know why people are upset about that.
House arrest. Well, because slavery is holy. It's sacred.
White people can't talk about slavery.
That particular kind of victimhood, that particular kind of oppression is holy and sacred, and you may not
attach anything else to it.
You may not compare anything else to it.
Because it's the most holy.
It's the most holy ground.
It's the holy of holies.
So then when they make the connection between slavery and police intrusion and the police putting their knee on Floyd's neck, that's okay.
No, because they're actually saying this is descended from slavery.
Oh.
We're still doing
systematic.
That. But if you talk about, but here's the thing, if the government though is the savior, the government is the savior, and so if you give power to the government to tell people to stay home, that's not slavery. Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Follow that.
No, that's wrong.
I know it's completely wrong.
So, all right. So we're
going to pick this up.
Yeah. When we come back on the next segment, we'll be able to talk about this a little more. Because I think that what William Barr is hitting at here is bigger than.
It's huge.
It's huge. Yeah, and I don't want to leave it right there, but we have to go. So when we come back, we'll finish up with William Barr. And don't forget, we're going to have Ben Greenfield on the third segment coming up next on Cross Politic.
When a medical need arises, hundreds of thousands of Christians across the nation care for one another by sharing financially for those medical needs. Samaritan members pray and reflect God's love and care by providing for one another. While times continue to change, God's love doesn't. He cares for us as we are called to care for one another.
Welcome back.
He is not wrong there.
No, he's not.
Welcome back.
Wow.
We didn't finish this.
No.
You know,
there's so much there. So much there.
Yeah. Download the app. Become a member.
Oh, live stream the whole conference October 1st through 3rd if you're a Fight Laugh Feast Club member.
Yeah.
Don't forget that.
So, is he right?
Of
next
course.
Next to slavery, this is the greatest infringement upon civil rights in American history.
How come we couldn't see that? We look at the police officer and everything that happened with George Floyd. You can't help but say that, man, that's no human being should be treated like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then at the same time, we just got told you can't go outside.
Yeah.
You can't go to your church. You can't hug your loved ones. You can't hardly go shopping.
You can't walk down the street with your cousins.
We just got told who was essential, who was none. We just categorized the whole human race in America.
Right.
And George Floyd is dying with the officer's knee on his neck and not being resuscitated, not treated like a human being.
Is America being suffocated?
How come we can't see it?
Right.
It's happening. It's not just in what's happening with Floyd. It's happening in our society.
Right. Yeah, business is being destroyed, families being destroyed, livelihoods being destroyed.
And they're covering it up.
Yeah. They're covering
Nashville's covering it up. That's right.
Right. They're covering it up.
That's right.
And it's amazing to me, you know, he's so right as it relates to the Black Lives Matter and what their narrative and their motions are. I mean, it's not hard. We were talking to somebody else about this, but just go read their website. It's pretty clear.
We're Marxists.
I mean, we're trained Marxists.
We want to destroy the nuclear family.
Right. It's clear. But, you know, also, too, I can't imagine if the police had killed 10,000 black men, which they haven't, by the way. I think their numbers are something like 300 total
right.
of black people that are killed every year or something like that.
And
by the
most of them
violence.
Actually are armed.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Most I think of there them
were 17
armed.
17 cases were not.
Last year? At, this is 2019.
Last,
year.
Last year that they looked at, they were like, okay, these are the ones who were not armed. Yeah. And most of those cases, when you look at them, you're like, oh, okay, I see. This one's a little problematic. But most, that's nothing.
You know, none of the 3,000 babies that are murdered today are armed.
Yeah.
I don't hear any outrage about
that. That's my only objection to what Barr said.
Yeah.
I would say, actually,
he's forgetting
there's
about
one thing that actually completely overplays even slavery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, that's
abortion.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
You asked Noxus, this is a question that Pastor Doug has asked, you know, does a black person rather be born in 1850?
Yeah.
In Charleston or 2020 in New York City?
Yeah. And think about it. New York City, 118,000 black babies were born. 130,000, 138,000 or more were murdered.
Shame.
You have a better chance at life in Charleston in 1850.
You know,
and you'll be free in 15 years.
I don't think we're not getting something about our moral capital here.
No,
we don't have any.
No, we don't.
Okay.
We are way worse than the American South.
The slave
we
owners
are way
of the
worse
South.
Than the American
we
South.
We don't have any capital. None.
So should we fly the rebel flag because they were better than us?
They're more righteous than us.
Their flag had less black people murdered under it than ours.
Than the American flag.
Mm. There's more blood on our flag.
And by the way, and this is something I don't think we can miss. When we're talking about we talked to Mark Mark Mitchell, I think, on Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah.
We are assuming that we still have some sort of moral hook inside of the American people, mm-hmm. A Christian moral conscience.
Yeah.
It's eroded. Yeah. It doesn't exist. Martin Luther King had something to pull the moral conscience of man from in his era and time.
Yeah. Right, right.
Right now, mm-hmm. if Martin Luther King had to be here with that same situation, he would have nothing to pull. He would have an empty rope.
So I've been revisiting the Jonah Goldberg liberal fascism that we actually read through last year or 2 years ago, whatever it was. And back to chapter 4. Jonah kind of goes through and just outlines how fascism kind of first reared its ugly head under the Woodrow Wilson administration, and then it came in under FDR, and then it came in under LBJ in 1964-1965 civil rights legislation. And he said one of the points he made, which was really good, was, you know, fascism didn't really take under Woodrow Wilson. It didn't really take under FDR. Obviously, it had a big impact and changed a bunch of stuff.
Sure.
But culturally, it didn't take because there was still a moral backbone in the people.
Yeah.
There was still a cultural, political culture among the people that were not going to let fascism affect them or influence them in the long haul.
Right.
But then it started turning a corner in 1964, 65. And now look at fascism now.
Right.
It's taken everywhere. Wear your mask.
Where's the pushback?
Yeah. Wear your mask.
John MacArthur. Church?
Exactly.
John MacArthur. David Benham told us that there are more faithful men out there, but man, they're not very loud.
I think
probably the pastor that represents us the best is Tim Keller.
Shame on you.
Oh man. Have you guys, did you guys
absolutely.
See did you guys see what do we want to go Tim Keller first or John Kasich?
You just hurt my soul.
He represents us well. And I think he's probably better than we deserve.
Yeah. So Tim Keller a couple days ago, he post this in a Twitter form and in Facebook. Here's it on Facebook.
Okay.
Apparently, he's writing some sort of article. So he's a little ambiguous on where this is coming from.
Yeah.
He's got a future article or post coming out that says, "The Bible binds my conscience to care for the poor, but it does not tell me the best practice or the best practical way to do it." And then he goes on and says, "The Bible binds my conscience to love immigrants, but it doesn't tell me how many legal immigrants to admit in the U.S. every year." And then he goes on to say, "The Bible tells me that abortion is a sin and a great evil, but it doesn't tell me the best way to decrease or end abortion in this country, nor which policies are most effective."
Yeah. We could rephrase it. Let's just rephrase it. Are you going to finish it?
No, please finish. There's a point.
I'm gonna finish. Go ahead, Toby.
I'm going to finish.
I'm done.
He's done. The current political parties offer a potpourri of different positions on these. and many, many other topics, most of which, as just noted, the Bible does not speak to directly. This means when it comes to taking political positions, voting, determining alliances and political involvement, the Christian has liberty of conscience. Christians cannot say to other Christians, no Christian can vote for, or every Christian must vote for, unless you can find a biblical command to that effect.
Tim Keller's jamming. He's trying to jam you right now.
Why is that?
You can't. You can't tell Democrats, you can't tell a Democratic Christian that he's wrong.
Right.
I will.
Right,
because so, I mean, he's a Christian.
He said, "Yeah, he said you can't tell a Christian, you can't bind a Christian's conscience off this.
Just take
a Democratic Christian.
Just real quick.
Yeah.
Substitute something for this. Right.
Slavery. Let's
do that.
Exactly.
So the Bible tells me that slavery. I'm gonna help him out a little bit. Make sure he's biblically literate.
Yeah.
The Bible tells me that race-based chattel slavery.
Yeah. There we go.
Is a sin and great evil. It does. But it doesn't tell me the best way to decrease or end a and race-based chattel slavery in this country, nor which policies are most effective. Now, keep going. The current political parties offer a potpourri of different positions on these and many other topics, most of which is just noted the Bible does not speak to directly. Right? When it comes to taking political positions.
He would never say that.
No, he would never say that. If he said he would get burned.
But this is the thing, though. I've thought about this, and it scares me because this is not a game. No, leave that up there. Leave that up.
This is his follow-up to this. So he kind of got viral. Yeah. He got kind of hit on this.
He got a little pushback.
And so this is his, pushback.
Right.
He says, some folks are missing the point of this thread. The Bible tells me that abortion is a sin and a great evil, but it doesn't tell me the best way to decrease or end abortion in this country, nor which policies are most effective. So he doubles down specifically on this point.
Right. So just, again, put race-based chattel slavery in there.
Doesn't the Bible say, thou shalt not kill?
Right.
But you know what, though?
Thou shalt not what, Tim?
And then it tells you what to do with murderers. Guys, we can't stress this enough. We talked about positive law and negative law earlier.
Yep, yep.
Tim Keller is pushing a positive law, and the Bible doesn't do that. Mm-mm. What the Bible does, it says, don't show any partiality when you make judgments.
Right.
Right? And so,
Lady Justice is blind.
Right. And he's trying to unblind her. He's trying to take the blindfold off.
Give me that connection. What do you mean he's trying to take the blindfold off of justice?
You don't have to, when you judge without partiality, you don't have to see what the person looks like or acts like in front of you. So it doesn't matter if they're rich or poor.
Yeah.
You can't steal from a person.
Right.
But the way God's law works, that when the negative law is put in place, it actually has positive gains to it.
Yeah.
It actually has freedom to operate in it. So you can't bear false witness, right? You can defend yourself. You can, but you don't have to, everything else in between that, there's liberty within that.
Right. Yeah. Right.
You can't kill. There's liberty in everything else, but here's what you can't do, right? And so it doesn't give you, a good way to take care of your neighbor, to build a parapet across the top of your roof so that people are protected when they walk around.
Right. Yep.
There's no punishment for that, right?
Right?
So what he's asking for is something that the Bible doesn't do on purpose.
Right.
Right.
Just add in, just put murder in.
Right. Right.
How can we decrease or end murder in this country?
Yeah.
I'm not sure which policies are most effective.
We have a bunch of murders. We have a murderous people.
He's forgotten that punishing wickedness actually educates people on how to live.
That's right. That's right. It's very educational. It actually clears a man's mind really fast. If you kill, you will be killed.
That's right. Really simple. If you steal, guess what? You need to pay back more than that.
What was taken will be given back, and what you did to him will be done to you.
So as it relates to immigration, then, you actually, guess what? What's the standard? You can have borders. Right. You can protect your borders, right? And you can protect your environment, your people. He's making it as if you can't do certain things. And then if you do those things, it doesn't have a falling out effect. That is ridiculous.
Yeah. And here's the thing is I think that one of the great sicknesses in our country, one of the great cancers, particularly in the church, is the cancer of academia.
Yep.
They're the new Pharisees.
What's that?
Yep. They're the new Pharisees.
Absolutely.
If your pastor's got a PhD, man, you might want to think about leaving that church. I'm serious. I'm serious. I can't tell you how many PhDs. I grew up in the old South where DTS, Dallas Theological Seminary, all these PhDs have gone out into all these churches around Texas.
Right.
And I don't have much good to say about pastors with PhDs.
No, it's true. I mean, one of the best ways to ruin a good man is to have him go to grad school.
Yeah. I heard A.T. Robles say, he said, if I was as smart as you, I'd preach heresy too.
But here's the deal. Like, this is the reason why Tim Keller, guys like Tim Keller who are putting this kind of vibe out there, are the reason why we have guys like John Kasich getting away with this kind of crap.
Yeah, I agree with your position on the life issue, Megan. But look, again, I'm not a person. First of all, I disagree with Joe Biden in a number of areas. I don't like, you know, some of what he's talking about in terms of capital gains taxes. But the issues here are dwarfed, in my opinion, by the fact that he's a person that can pull us together. So do I think that if he wins, that all of a sudden all these things are going to happen that are negative? No, I don't believe that at all, because that's not his character. That's not who he is. And as you know, I mean, I don't really want to get, I hope this is appropriate for me to say, mm-hmm. as you know, your father and Joe were great friends. Why? Yes. Not because they agreed on everything, but they could find common ground. So do I think we're going to end up in some cataclysmic place if he wins? I don't. But I do believe 4 more years of this division is wrecking the very soul of our country. And we continue down this path. I don't know how we come back. Except, by the way, I would encourage people to look at what I wrote on USA Today about the power of faith. Franklin Roosevelt, Lincoln himself, called on the power of God to help the American people to overcome crises.
Wow.
That is part of how we're going to overcome this division, with the inspiration from our Creator animating individuals to wake up to what's happening in this country.
The spirit of our Creator.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
That's blasphemous.
So he starts off and says, I'm pro-life like you.
Right. Because that's the question. That was the question she asked. Yep. It was, you know, how can you vote for Joe Biden if he's so pro-abort?
And then he says, because Joe Biden will bring the country together.
Right.
Unity.
How could you vote for...
Put your pro-life, you know, convictions aside.
No. And then he has the audacity to say, I don't agree with him on a lot of things, like... What did
gainful
he
employment well, taxes no, or whatever.
Yeah, capital gains taxes.
Capital gains,
taxes.
There we go, yeah.
How dare you? How dare you compare that to the slaughter of millions of babies?
Unbelievable. That's right, Toby.
The exact same question, though, would be, how could you vote for a slave... A pro-slavery...
Chattel slavery
president. Someone who says, I'm going to... Not only am I going to defend the institution of race-based chattel slavery, yep. but I'm going to expand it. Yep. I'm going to re-up the slave trade.
Because he brings the country together.
And them saying, but he's going to bring the country together. That's the insanity of this.
But this is Tim Keller's logic coming out here.
And he's saying, Tim Keller is saying, you just can't bind someone's conscience between these two things.
Okay, what do we know for sure? We know there's no such thing as neutrality, right? But notice where the unity ball is being pushed. The unity ball is being pushed on the side where abortion is legal, homosexuality is fine, transgenderism is fine, men and women, boys and
unity?
Girls. Yeah, abuse of women, all that stuff. That's where we are supposed to take all of our values, right? And then push those aside while we gather over in this circle to talk about unity.
It's the unity of death.
That's what it is.
That's right.
And by the way, there's some things I don't want to be unified on.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. And those are the things that actually are where my convictions are. And how, like you say, how dare you invoke the name of God? That's blasphemous. When you start saying God is the way that we're going to do this, what does God require of his humanity?
To protect life, at the very least, recognize the image of God in little babies.
I ask my kids in their catechism, what is the chief end of man? To glorify God, enjoy him. What has God given us to teach us how we may glorify and enjoy him? Right. The scriptures are the only rule to teach us how we may glorify and enjoy him forever. So if you're going to invoke God, you have to invoke his scriptures. And what do his scriptures teach?
Gold, hallelujah. Gold, hallelujah.
But I think this has also been a really problematic in the church. I mean, how many sermons have you heard on unity over the last 30 years? I mean, there's been a lot of sermons on unity.
Right? No, but...
And they're pushing that narrative. They're actually pushing a wrong-headed kind of unity in the church.
Well, and this is this is why the Pharisees and the high priests hated Jesus.
That's right.
Because he was coming to bring unity. But he came to bring unity in the truth.
That's right.
Which caused all sorts of division. Absolutely. Yeah.
Right? All kinds of division. And yes, is there a way to be a complete jerk? And yes, of absolutely. Course. Is there a way
and
to
cause dissension? Paul warned against this.
Of course. Yep. But everywhere Paul went, riots broke out.
That's
everywhere Paul went, there was fights. There was tension. There was challenges.
Right.
And he, but this is the same Paul that wrote, love is patient, love is kind.
Yep.
A minister of the word must not be quarrelsome.
That's right.
And that's all true, but that doesn't mean then that you lay down and take it.
Because the unity that's being preached in the church is the kind of unity where it's like, you guys need to be nice to one another.
Yeah.
Well, is that 11th commandment that, kind of unity?
Every time we talk about unity, it's always away from our principles. And that is not, look, one thing we have to remember, if we want unity and we want people who really don't agree with us, they have a better chance of survival under God's law and God's standard than they do under ambiguous, undefined standard.
Yep.
And so if we go over there, if we actually love our neighbors, we want real unity. It's like, hey, bro, let me tell you something. There's certain ways I can't treat you under God's standard, even though you're not a Christian.
Right.
You want this much more than you want something that's arbitrary, because now there's no standard.
The whole LGBT jihad,
yeah,
and BLM jihad, which is what they are,
yeah,
is what they are. Those things will destroy themselves.
That's right.
God's law will actually make more freedom for some of those people than their own crusade.
That's right.
Their own jihad will do for themselves. They're destroying themselves.
Yeah, they are.
What they're sowing, they will reap, and it will destroy them. But God's law will actually make room for those people to exist in his kingdom.
Yeah, and that's okay. More Cross Politics coming up next with Ben Greenfield. Next on Cross Politics.
Are we going to get our workout uniforms on?
Nah, man. But if we don't start defining what God's law is and acting like it actually has answers, you're going to act like the God of the universe didn't give us answers on how to fix these
problems.
We
don't act like it has
he
answers.
He made the universe.
Hi, I'm Robert Borton, CEO of Classical Conversations. Our most precious commodity is time. No one has ever lied on their deathbed wishing they had spent more time making money. They all wish they had spent more time creating a legacy. Our modern education system steals that legacy, steals that time from our children. That's why I'm passionate about homeschooling. That's why at Classical Conversations, we want to give you more time to create that legacy, follow your passions, and glorify God. Visit classicalconversations.com for more information.
And that's clean, believe it or not.
What? You don't like the size of our coffee cups?
Oh, that's like a pinky coffee.
That's not even a
shot
cup
of espresso.
I agree.
Camper cup. See, Gabe, you're fired.
It's a camper cup that's for whiskey, even though we don't have whiskey in here because we're on TV.
Welcome back to Cross Politics.
I'm done camping.
Welcome back. On the one and only Fight Laugh Feast Network, with us in the studio.
In the network.
In the internet. From Washington State, Mr. Ben Greenfield.
Hey, man.
Hold on.
Hey.
I actually took some time to write a bio.
Oh, did you? I thought, okay.
Hold on. Ben Greenfield leapt into the fitness world in 2005.
Mm-hmm. He did. I remember that.
Eventually was voted as America's top personal trainer in 2008. He competed as one of the top-ranked amateur triathletes in the world, completing over 120 races, 12 Ironman triathlons, winning gold medal for the U.S. in long course triathlon.
Well, you left out the part where I rode my bike to Moscow.
From Spokane.
Several times. He also, you've done like all kinds of I don't even know what squads are. Swimming, biking, running. Adventures in Hawaii, Thailand, Japan.
Japan.
All over the world. Eventually, Ben pivoted into media, writing, speaking, consulting, launching.
I'm a leaper and a pivoter.
You are, right? Did you write this? First fitness podcast. It became.
Dang good copywriters.
New York Times bestselling author, Beyond Training.
Wow, that was a great children's novel.
Lots of pictures.
Is it coloring book? Yeah, it good, man. I love coloring books.
Have you read? And it says 13 other books.
Yeah,
really?
You've written 14 books now.
Yeah.
Also,
I thought you guys were friends.
I finished three during COVID.
Wow.
And a couple on the way down this afternoon. Yeah. He also created the Christian Gratitude Journal, which you sent me when you had me on your podcast.
That's right.
A couple years back.
We didn't get any of those.
We did. Yes, we did.
How come he got
He sent us a box.
I'm getting rid of it. I replaced it with a different journal.
Oh,
it's called the Spiritual Disciplines Journal.
Oh, a new one. Oh, it's upgrading.
It's upgrading.
Okay,
it's a great kids book. Also,
he has completed the Spartan Delta, trained with Navy SEALs, completed across the globe in open water swims, mountain runs, adventure races, winning multiple USA bow hunting competitions. Don't turn around when he's in the room.
Don't ask me about last week's elk, though.
Yeah, still alive.
You're the co-founder of
unfortunately.
Is it Keon?
Keon. Yes.
Yeah. Create step-by-step solutions for some supplements, fitness gear, to coaching, consulting. You are a biohacker.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We can do that?
I don't know what that is.
We can biohack.
Are you like Edward Snowden?
Well, actually, I don't even like that term, biohacking.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
Because if you look at like all the old biohackers, they were like installing compasses under their skin to vibrate when they face true north and injecting chlorella into their eyeballs and like magnetic
eugenics,
in the fingertips like through the Minority Report screen thing. Like nowadays, biohacking is like I put butter in my coffee and jumped up and down trampoline at the gym.
Oh, that's not
like,
nearly as cool.
That's cooking and exercise.
By that standard, I'm a biohacker.
I thought you were doing like Elon Musk kind of biohacking.
Right, like Neuralink, yeah.
Ben lives on 10 acres in forested wilderness in Washington State where he resides with his wife, Jessa, and twin boys, River and Taryn.
Man, this is written well. I don't even live. I reside.
Yes, you do.
I leap.
Man, you leap.
Verbs, you should start using these verbs.
Word hacking.
It also says you enjoy worshiping God, praising Christ, swinging kettlebells, fiction, guitar, ukulele, spearfishing, bow hunting, plant foraging, and cooking.
Wow.
It's a lot. You can find this and more at bengreenfieldfitness.com. Ben, thanks for coming to Across Politic.
Well, thank you for having me. Yeah. I thought I was just coming for a haircut.
No.
Surprise.
But you could get a haircut in our building.
Neil could cut your hair.
Yeah.
Probably.
No, I just did. No. I just got my hair cut.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So you have spent the last, 15 years of your life in health and fitness.
Probably more. Okay. Probably more. Yeah.
You weren't really that athletic though when I was with you in college. I mean, you kind of were.
Well, I played tennis. That was my sport in college.
Yeah, but tennis is not really a sport though. I mean,
you know he can beat you up.
I'm gonna put you in a room with a hungry Rafael Nadal and see what
cool
happens to you.
And while I'm on camera, I'm good. I'm good. I know it. I got confidence while I'm on camera.
Ben, so
watch Federer tear you a new one.
Why should Christians care about health and fitness? We're just going to die and go to heaven anyways, right?
Yeah. We will, but this is our vessel. This is our vessel. And, in my opinion, the better equipped we are to live out our purpose in life with the unique skill set that God's given us, then the more we're going to be able to make an impact on this planet. Yeah. And, I'm not about, just grasping at straws and spending 60 years of your life trying to live until you're 140. But at the same time, if you can think clearly, if you can perform well, if you can take care of your family, if you can protect, if you can provide, if you can think clearly, and if you've taken care of your body and your brain and educated yourself on how to do so, I think you can make greater impact for God.
Okay. There's sort of like, it seems like there's a huge divide in some ways between those who maybe look like they idolize health and fitness.
Yeah. So they do idolize.
And then it's like a bunch of us over here be like, I walk to the kitchen and back.
Yeah.
Well, we got three stairs.
I mean, three sets of stairs to get up here. I mean, did you notice that? Gabe breaks sweat every morning.
I don't know how you guys got the pizza up here.
We didn't. We had it delivered.
We had it delivered?
You outsourced?
We totally had it delivered.
We outsourced.
You think we walk up here with that box?
No, I agree. People do, of course, in physical culture, idolize health dramatically. And it's noble and it's laudable because it's put on a pedestal. It's different than, say, alcoholism or porn addiction or something like that. It's not something you hide away. People will spend hours in the gym or hours hunting down the perfect orthorexically prepared, meal that doesn't have the gluten and the dairy in it and has the right macronutrient ratio and everything, just because that is either their escape or their addiction or what they're using to fill their God-shaped hole.
And you can take that idol and put it up on the shelf and say, hey, everybody, look at my idol. This is a great idol, right?
Right. And that's what I run into over and over again is, when I go to conferences and speak or I've got people asking me for advice on the phone or whatever, people at their core are extremely unhappy. And we're talking people who, six-pack abs, and they look good in spandex and they have the perfect diet and they're not getting sick and they're still unhappy.
They're miserable. They're
still searching. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about on like the reform ditch is, was it 1 Timothy 4 or in the 1 Timothy chapter 5 where it says godly exercise profits little?
Physical exercise.
Yeah, excuse me. Physical.
Godly exercise profits a lot.
A lot, right. But, so physical exercise profits little, godly exercise profits a lot. And then we never work out.
Right. But it does profit a little.
Yeah,
and it does. I think that compared to the spiritual disciplines, the physical disciplines don't scratch the surface on the impact that you'll be able to make for God. Yet, I still feel that you have to take care of what God gave you that also was made in His image. And I just I don't think that being overweight or having a body that's not perfect by pop culture standards is something that we necessarily need to shoot for. I don't even think that's God image, right? I don't think you have to say Rocky Balboa was God's image and God is big with broad shoulders and a six pack.
And everything short of that is somehow
you failed.
Deep sin.
Right. But I do think you know. I think you have a knowing in your heart when your body is not capable of going forth and whatever, you know. Hopping on a plane, where are you guys going to a conference down in Nashville,
Franklin.
And just, you know, being completely inflamed and poor on sleep and unable to function and unable to fellowship because you haven't taken care of your body to be able to go across the globe and not have the circadian rhythm stuff just you know, kick
you
in the butt.
So you're like, you vocationally, you've been called to this, like, you know, God's gifted you, given you the interest, given the abilities, given the, you know, opportunities. Hold on. You've given yourself to it though, in terms of your life. Most people probably aren't called to give themselves to it in the same way you are. That you're a coach, you're a consultant, you know, you're doing that kind of stuff. Talk to someone like me or talk to someone in our audience who has a full-time job, has a family, is committed to the local church.
And let's say they're about 30 pounds overweight, got a belly.
Give them
and his wife is an athletic trainer. Yeah.
Give that guy a pep talk. Encourage him. And what does a balanced view of health and fitness look like?
I hear you. Now, first of all, God did give me a passion for physical culture, but he also works in mysterious ways. And what I have found is that I've been tempted to regret the 20 years that I spent teaching people how to take really good care of their bodies because I feel I didn't place enough emphasis on the spiritual disciplines, on meditation and journaling and fasting and worship and relationship and prayer and scripture reading and all these things that build the spiritual muscles. Yet in the route that God put me on, he also gave me a platform. He gave me an audience. And now 20 years into this, I'm turning around. And just like I was saying earlier, I'm looking at all these people that I'm standing in front of at stages or on a podcast mic or on the phone with and realizing, oh my gosh, you know, I have an enormous audience and they're all hungry for what really matters. Mm-hmm. But I think that even my own approach was skewed and imbalanced in a very dramatic way for years and years.
Yeah.
But again, you know, I don't have regrets as much as gratefulness that now God has given me a platform to be able to take a message to people who actually need to hear it.
Yeah.
Now, when you look at the other part of things, you know, people who have not been taking care of themselves and need to know where to start, you know, this is where I think the whole gym culture, health club culture can be a little bit of a negative because, you know, up until 100 years ago, gyms and health clubs were relegated to the realm of the gladiator,
chopping
the
warrior, wood, or
you know, the person who had to compete for a living or the person who was going to die.
It was for a professional.
Right. It was for a professional. And now it's so funny. You know, people are talking about how they're getting unfit during COVID because they're stuck at home. And I'm like, you got a garage,
right?
You got a backyard, you got a basement.
Push ups.
Yeah. Like human beings, for a very, very long time, we lift. We move and we sprint, right? Low level physical activity throughout the day. Take all your phone calls while you're walking. Put a manual treadmill in front of a stand up desk in your basement and have that be your office. Take the stairs, you know, park far away every time you go to the grocery store. If you got to walk more than, you know, 3 miles, take a car, but otherwise walk, you know, just move as much as you can during the day. And a lot of research shows around 10,000 steps is a good goal to shoot for. You got a Fitbit.
10,000 steps a month?
10,000 steps
a day. Toby's like, how can I fit 10,000 steps in my life?
Toby's looking at his watch. 120,000 steps, nailed it.
Always looking for that loophole.
A day.
A day. Lift something heavy. Like I have in the room next to my office, I have what's called a hex bar, which is just a deadlift loaded up with a bunch of heavy weights.
Yeah.
And I can just walk in there and lift it up 3 or 5 times at different points throughout the day.
Okay.
Right? The same as our ancestors might have done while building fences or building rock walls or lifting rocks or whatever. Like we're taking a post-industrial lifestyle that's largely sedentary and trying to hack it in a way to still give our bodies those little bursts throughout the day. And then sprint, you know, in addition to lifting, moving, and sprinting, play some tennis, play some soccer, go swimming. I mean, if you want to choose any activities, they actually did a study where they looked at the activities or the sports that one could engage in that were most conducive to longevity in terms of living a long and healthy lifestyle. You guys want to guess what they
swimming.
Are?
Swimming.
Basketball. Yeah.
I was going to say swimming.
Yep, swimming's one. For aerobic, swimming beats out jogging,
golf,
running.
Golf. That's what I was going to
say. The other one involves merging of the left and right hemispheres of the brain, some amount of fellowship or social activity, a little bit of sprinting here and there, a little bit of reaction time.
Tennis.
But not being able to body a lot. Tennis, table tennis, racquetball, any racket sport.
Really?
So if you're going to do anything for your sprinting, you play a racket sport and you swim.
Okay, so I want to go back here real quick. We'll move forward here in a minute. But I have noticed over the years, I was actually talking to my wife yesterday about you, and noticed that you have started to live out more publicly your Christian faith in all this. I remember when you left, you graduated, what, a year before me, 2004? I was 05, or you were 03, or something like that.
Third grade, sixth.
No,
grade.
University of Idaho. University,
we both seventh.
We both graduated from University of Idaho.
He's like, that ain't nobody's business.
Yeah, no, I think I'm older than you.
I think I was like a year or two ahead of you out of Idaho.
You were ahead of me in grade because you were smarter, but I'm older than you. So just want
to. You just right. Is that what we need to know right now?
Really?
Is that
you're gonna go
to finish this question? Crucial. No.
I've seen, I think, you know, you living out your Christian faith more in your public efforts and what you do.
God lit a fire into me. And and I was about to lose my family, lose my relationship. I was mm-hmm. steeped in physical culture to the extent to where I was very fleshly, very uh-huh. carnal. Uh-huh. I mean, I was a Christian in name only in terms of my church attendance, my Bible reading, my care for my family, me stepping up to the plate as a father, as a husband. And I had a very, very difficult conversation with Jessa like 7 years ago where, you know, our marriage was about to fall apart just because of all the crappy ways that I was living my own life and my neglect of union with God. And it was that really shoved me over the edge.
Wow. You know,
I realized I'm either going to lose my family, lose my legacy, lose my children, and, you know, continue to travel around the world and be some fitness guru, fitness icon. And I know a lot of guys who are
ruining their marriage.
Gurus, 50 yeah. old, you know, and they're divorced.
Yeah.
And, you know, by all the world sacrificed standards, they made that an amazing lifestyle, right? They're traveling around the world, sleeping around, get great bodies. You know, they're working out in the gym, and you know, they have a very carnal, fleshly lifestyle, and they have you know, no leashes, no chains, and and they're free men. That was the route I was on. And it was really knowing that God wanted me to be there for my family, and I was making a lot of mistakes that lit a fire under me to care for my own spiritual health, care for my family. Once I put a lot of those pieces in place, I realized that what I was saying earlier is true. The world needs, especially physical culture, a lot more people who are going to step up and teach the spiritual disciplines along with the physical disciplines, the mental disciplines. And what's been absolutely magical is how when I'm at a conference or I'm writing a blog post now, because every Sunday I write a blog post called Sabbath Ramblings, which is just all about union with God and mm-hmm. purpose and presence and family. People come out of the woodwork saying they were afraid to talk about Christ in the fitness world until I started saying some of these things. And it's incredibly encouraging to me.
Absolutely.
You know, this last book I'm finishing up right now is called Fit Soul. And it's just all about all these spiritual disciplines and my own path and coming to learn a lot of those.
Now, so, how do you, cause like, it seems like some of the jargon you still use comes from the fitness world.
Oh yeah.
And then you're using some of that jargon with the scriptures, with the Bible, with the
that's the language the tribe speaks.
Yeah, that's right. I don't necessarily have a problem with that.
It is got a problem with his Ebonics.
It's speaking in tongues. It is kind of like
but it can be, you know, a little, at least to me, a little throwing me off a little bit, because I'm like, okay, I think I agree with you talking about like spiritual discipline, but I also know what the fitness world says about yoga discipline or whatever, you know, kind of mixing and synchronizing things that shouldn't be synchronized, you know.
Give me an example.
Yoga or people wanting to be spiritual in the fitness world, and then we just sprinkle Jesus on top, and okay, that's your spiritual fitness kind of thing, and then, you know,
I would never suggest that people sprinkle Jesus on top of yoga and call it a Christian practice. I mean, and granted, yoga is taken from a pagan ritual, pagan lifestyle, you know, Eastern practice, yet at the same time, you know, yoga is absolutely fantastic for your blood pressure, for your stress levels, for lowering your cortisol. I mean, the actual stretchy part of yoga, not the other six or seven disciplines that are also part of yoga, the religious practices. Right. But there's no reason that we can't take like some really good stretches that make you feel amazing in the morning and make you healthier and claim them for Christ.
No, I would have a problem, you know, if my wife was doing yoga over in Eastern India, I'd be like, no, we aren't doing that. Right. And even in some gyms here in the U.S., I'd be like, no, that's pagan. But like, you know, I mean, at North Idaho Athletic Club, where my wife works, they do yoga class, and it's just a stretching class. It's not,
Yeah.
It's not right. a pagan worship.
I'll talk to you afterwards. I'll talk to you afterwards.
I'm saying context significantly matters on that.
Yeah. Man,
as soon as they start doing the Satan na ya, you're out.
Yeah. Start speaking in tongues right there.
See?
I'm really disappointed that we're not going to, like, when you talk about biohacking, I was like, man, we're going to talk about biohacking.
We're going to get there. You know,
are we? Yeah, but he says there's no such thing as biohacking. He's like, not really.
No. There's a new definition of biohacking.
Oh, okay.
Really. I mean, you know, and that's why I was saying when Toby was reading the introduction, when people call me a biohacker, I'm like, not really. I'm just a health enthusiast.
Okay.
But you know, there are a lot of cool things you could do nowadays, either with technology or science or supplementation to help you to, you know, think better, think faster, perform better, recover faster.
Yeah.
You know, feel better when you travel.
Before we get there, because I want to get into all that stuff, because I kind of want you to biohack me, basically. I don't know what that means, but we'll figure this out. But
TV show.
What are some things that you see that are really basic on the table things that maybe don't lead right into exercise, but just the health part of it, that people don't take advantage of that's sitting right on the table?
Sure. Let's go with six things. Sunlight would be one.
Sunlight.
Right, getting out in the sunlight, near and far infrared rays of sunlight, even the UVA and UVB that's so often vilified. Because
but the virus, though.
Radiation concerns.
I don't know if I could get out.
That's why all the black people are dying, because they don't get vitamin D.
Despite the evidence that UV rays actually kill viruses,
people are
stuck inside. It was one of the worst things.
You got that from Trump.
So, I mean, 20 to 60 minutes of sunlight a day.
Okay.
And, you know, when it comes to biohacking, now there's a bunch of companies, and I use stuff like this. They'll actually produce, like, indoor sunlight emitting panels, where if you're stuck in an office during the day, you can use infrared light, near infrared light, far infrared light, get all the same stuff you get from the sun. Kind of like using a walking treadmill, like I was talking about earlier.
Yeah,
you can't get outside during the day.
Okay.
And you actually get a lot of the benefits that you would get from sunlight. You know, the only thing you miss out on is the vitamin D from UVB radiation. Sunlight would be one. Not enough people just get out.
Okay, so that's one.
Right. That'd be one. Number two, and there's a fantastic documentary about this called Earthing, and a book that I believe is the same name. That or it's called Grounding. It's this idea that the Earth is actually an incredibly healing surface. Like, the actual planet itself emits what are called negative ions. These are highly anti-inflammatory. So our bodies, our cells are like batteries. You know, if you read a book like Jerry Tennant's Healing is Voltage, or Robert Becker has a book called The Body Electric, it's this idea that every single cell has an electrochemical gradient across it. Right? It's supposed to have a slightly negative charge on the inside. Mm-hmm. And what happens is, upon exposure to Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, technology, not being connected to the earth, not being outdoors, not being in the ocean, not being on sand or other, you know, conductive surfaces that are rich in minerals, this gradient, this charge, actually tends to become close together. So you have less of a negative charge on the inside, more of a negative charge on the outside. One of the best ways to reverse that is to go outdoors and to be barefoot when you do so.
What's wrong with getting closer together? Does it make you feel bad? Does it make you when those negative charges get closer together, what does it
do? The actual passage of compounds in and out of the cell is reduced, and the interior of the cell doesn't function as well when it's positively charged. So you get lower mitochondrial activity, you get lower production of ATP, which is your body's energy currency. Okay. Basically, your metabolism just slows.
So
if you go outside with big built-up rubber-soled shoes on, you're still insulating that surface. But if you go outside barefoot, or, you know, similar to like the light panels that you could bring in that would bring the sun indoors, they have like grounding mats or earthing mats. I have one at my desk. So when I'm standing at my desk interviewing somebody for a podcast or whatever, I'm actually standing
in dirt
on the earth.
Is it dirt?
Dirt would be really nice.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, my wife didn't want a sandbox in the office. Like, so.
You or the dirt's going to go outside. Yeah. Which one is
it? One of you. One exactly. of you. So when I was playing college basketball down in California, one of my teammates would wear a magnetic brace, but a magnetic sleeve over his knee.
Yeah, that's a little different. That's designed for blood flow, just because, you know, your blood has some small metals in it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so that's actually a problem for people who have like metal overload. You have a lot of aluminum,
a lot of
mercury. Yep. Then you pair that with them getting bombarded with Wi-Fi signals and Wi-Fi routers and everything else. Like, it actually is problematic. There's this diagnosable term now called electro hypersensitivity, where people get brain fog and feel sluggish when they're around Wi-Fi routers. That's actually a thing now. And often you find that it pairs with a high level of heavy metals in the blood. Anyways, though, the grounding and the earthing is interesting.
So,
and
you sunlight, talk about athletes. Grounding.
Yeah, sunlight, grounding. Roger Federer is wearing those now on his shoes. He has like little grounding straps on his shoes there. Playing tennis.
Yeah.
So the third and the fourth would be heat and cold. We're largely disconnected these days from environmental fluctuations that make us a little bit uncomfortable. You know, we know from a study that was done in Finland that the men over there live 4 to 5 times on average, 4 to 5 years longer on average than their peers. And once they isolate that for all the different confounding variables, they actually found that it was their sauna practice. You know, and you get a detoxification effect when you're in the sauna. You get the heat, you get the blood flow. I've spent a lot of time over in Finland, like at the Men's Finnish Sauna Society, which is fantastic compound right on the edge of the Baltic Sea. And, you know, it's not just sauna. You're there, you're quiet, it's very meditative. Then you go out and you socialize out on the dock with all the other guys, go jump in
it's
the
culture.
Sea, come back in. Yeah. So some of it is culture, some of it is social, but some of it is the actual effects of what's called cellular resilience, the production of these heat shock proteins that sauna does for you. So I have a sauna. I put one in my basement, and I go in there almost every day at some point. When I have dinner parties at my house, everybody comes over. I tell them, bring their shorts. We don't sit around on the couch and drink wine. We go down in the sauna, and we drink water. We get a sweat on, and then I have this giant cold pool out in the forest, and we all trudge through the snow or through the yard out to the cold pool, jump in the cold pool, then go in and eat dinner. And that's how we party at the Greenfield house. heat and then cold. And then I also have this ice bath outside my office that I keep at 32 degrees. And when I'm dragging in the afternoon, I feel like it'll wake me up. I'll go, instead of having a cup of coffee, jump in that thing, and it just lights you up for the rest of the day. And that's actually the fourth thing, is getting cold as well. Okay. So you want to get hot and you want to get cold multiple times per week. Like, just get out of the whole comfy, modern,
same temperature, go from your car to your
heating,
house.
Like, get comfortable being hot, get comfortable being cold, get out in the sun, get connected to the planet. And then the last two things are also related to our bodies being a battery. In order to carry charges through the battery, and we were talking about how somebody has metals in their blood, you also need minerals. And the way that your body carries things through its system, you know, water, it's you know, blood is 90% water. Your lymph fluid is 90% water. But water these days, you know, municipal water is fluoridated, it's chlorinated, it's got a lot of chemicals in it. But if you can get spring water, good, clean, pure water, a good water filter in your home, and just ensure that the number one beverage you should be drinking throughout the day is clean and pure, and furthermore, and this would be the sixth thing, has minerals added to it. So now you've got these charges that are being carried throughout your body. So, you know, pinch of sea salt in your water, and you can get amazing salt in any grocery store. I did an interview with a water researcher and a salt researcher, and they did what's called a mass spec analysis of all the different salts that are out there. And they looked at levels of microplastics and toxins and metals and the amount of minerals. And this brand of salt that you can buy down here at Rosar's, just that blue bag of Celtic salt.
Mm-hmm. My wife loves that stuff.
That's the best salt out there. Oh, so you can take little pinches of that, put it to some filtered water during the day. But if you're already moving and exercising in some way, and you're eating some semblance of a healthy, recognizable diet that our great-grandparents would have recognized in terms of the food constituents, then I would say sunlight, earth, heat, cold, water, and minerals, and you're going to be feeling pretty good.
When you said earlier that some people can have too many minerals, would that mean you'd want to stay away from?
I said too many metals.
Metals.
In a lot of ways, it seems like our own success as a culture has kind of ruined our ability to be kind of like our forefathers, which were outside, were working. They had their hands in the dirt, in the earth, right? Yep. They would be in hot outside of there. They'd be in the cold, whatever
it was.
But
they also weren't living as long as us.
Arguably,
I mean, childhood death was a lot more rampant, but the actual lifespan of adults wasn't remarkably different. Hmm. You know, there was a lot more
but
death.
But they lived happier than we do in a lot of ways.
They were happier.
So the death rate age of death would be lower because baby or younger people would die.
If you factor in the death of babies, all of a sudden the lifespan of an indigenous hunter-gatherer is going to go down just because they don't have the type of healthcare system that's taking care of babies and keeping them from dying. But even modern hunter-gatherer tribes, when they do happiness ratings and profile mood state scores on these people, they're happier.
Yeah.
And you know, the last figure I saw that was probably changed due to inflation was like $70,000 a year to be extremely happy. Like, that's where you see where you don't see an increased curve in terms of happiness related to wealth. And so, I mean, living naturally, being outside. I mean, I watch my wife, Jessa, during the day, and I get jealous. I mean, she's outside pushing around a wheelbarrow, hanging out in the garden, building rock walls, taking care of the goats and the chickens. And I'm inside on my computer, you know, stand on my dinky little mat with my lights, trying to replicate what she's outside doing. Yeah,
naturally.
Right, yeah. Yeah, but yeah. If you can do it naturally, I mean, so much better.
Yeah, I bet if we take into consideration our deaths for infants or for abortion, we probably not do it very long at all if you take all that into consideration.
Yeah.
So my dad was a herbalist, and so he could sit down with somebody and sit, talk for like 15 minutes and recommend to them a bunch of things like, okay, listen, you don't know this yet, but you're probably going to have diabetes. Like look in your eyes and tell, and he'd give them a list of things that they would need. Do you do that too?
It's like looking at Michael Jordan.
You kind of say like, dude.
Your kidneys are failing, man.
There's this concept like muscle testing where you'll have somebody hold a supplement in their hand, then you test their muscle. If it's weak, you know, that means that supplement isn't for them. And
what?
If it's stronger, it means it is.
A supplement?
A supplement, a food, a medication. It's called muscle testing. It's also called kinesiology. It's something that I don't think has a lot of science behind it. There's a few people that have quantifiable devices that actually measure the amount of force produced by the arm that I put a little more faith in. But no, I am personally a fan of pretty rigorous scientific testing when it comes to, you know, blood, gut, saliva, hormones, urine, to actually determine what somebody needs. But I mean, there's something to some of the things you mentioned, like iridology is actually a practice where they don't look into people's eyes. You use a high resolution camera to look at the actual blood vasculature, and similar to traditional Chinese medicine, where there's certain points on the foot that correlate to specific organs, that if you have work done on the foot, you can see improvement in things like blood flow or what's called qi flow, or those specific organs. Same concept acupuncture is based on. You can draw the same corollaries with the vessels in the eyes, but that takes a long time for somebody to learn.
Yeah.
And we're not talking just like looking at you and kind of saying,
yeah, no,
you should have pizza tonight, bro.
I think it was more like reflexology and those kind of things, you know, so he can kind of, you know, massage somebody's foot and be like, okay, yeah, cholesterol buildup, or look at somebody's eyes, you can see the yellows in the sides of their eyes.
There's something to some of that. There's something to like almost like a horse sense, a feel, a rough analysis. But if you want to get into the real nitty gritty of, you know, we were talking about metals, for example, you have to test your hair and your blood to actually see what's in there.
So you've pivoted in the last few years. That's what it said in your bio. Pivoted.
And he leaped.
I leaped.
And you leaped.
And he resides.
And resided.
But after you leapt and before you resided, you pivoted to more business and consulting.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about the challenges that people face in the business world. What have you learned? Has your physical fitness and some of these things that you love studying and growing in, has that influenced or helped you as you've made that pivot?
Well, when you say business consulting, I'm not the majority of what I do is not helping people build their businesses. I do some advising, some consulting, some investing, primarily for companies in the business sector, but my clients who are business people, who are executives, they do come to me for fitness coaching, for nutrition coaching, for sleep coaching, et cetera. And they have all the same complaints that we've already been talking about, right? Yeah. Like, how do I get the time? How do I squeeze it in?
Right.
What goes on the top of the totem pole? And you know, that's pretty straightforward. For me though, you know, the pivot leap that I made, like a graceful ballerina, was going from operating a bunch of personal training studios and gyms, doing a lot of what I was doing, Gabe, when you knew me down here in Moscow, you know, counting dumbbell curls for soccer moms, and really began to do a lot more of the media, the podcasting, the book publishing, starting a supplements company, starting a coaching services to coach the coaches so I could have other people doing what I was doing.
Right.
That was all just when my kids were born. And I realized that it was unsustainable for me to, you know, do what I wanted to do, which was homeschool River and Taran, and then also be at a gym from 4 to noon, pop in for lunch, leave again till 9, and come home and be with clients all day, and then try to reply to emails at night.
So
that was just change lifestyle.
Gotcha.
Okay, so I'm ready to get down to the nitty gritty now because we gotta figure
this
out.
It's getting warm in here.
Not just that, but I want to talk about just practical stuff like sleep.
Yeah.
How do we get better sleep? And what are we missing out on when we don't get it?
There's a concept called sleep hygiene, and it's not hidden under a rock anymore. Most people are kind of aware of the basic sleep hygiene concepts, namely, you want to be in the dark, you want to be cold, you want it to be somewhat silent, and you want to be in a protected environment, right? So you look at your bedroom as a cave, really. But then when it comes to the practical manifestations of how to actually do that, that's where a lot of people just kind of lose it and aren't sure what to do. Like, keep the bedroom cold. What do you mean? Do I go to bed in my boxers? Do I take a cold shower before bed? You know, what do I do? Some of the biggest wins are if you're going to work out and you're going to work out in the evening, you do take a cold shower afterwards, because they have shown that if you work out hard and it's within 3 hours of when you go to bed, your body temp is high enough to where it disrupts your normal deep sleep, which, to reply to your other question, is when a lot of memory consolidation, nervous system repair, learning, et cetera, takes place. Right?
Okay.
So you want to get into your deep sleep levels, and sleeping cold helps with that. Keeping the room temperature somewhere around 63 to 65 degrees Fahrenheit mm-hmm. is actually a good temperature. The metric I use is if you're taking off your clothes to get into bed, assuming that you take off your clothes before you get into bed, and it's a little bit cold and you kind of don't want to take off your clothes, like, that's the perfect temperature.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, these sheets are going to be cold. All right, I'm in. I feel good now.
Yeah.
And so that's what you want for the temperature. And then there are biohacks. Like, I sleep on something called a chili pad. It circulates 55-degree cold water underneath my bed the whole time I'm asleep, which, now that I'm cooking meat all the time on that Traeger grill, is amazing, because I get a big old ribeye and I don't get the meat sweats and I sleep just fine. But if I didn't have that, I mean, that leads me into another piece of advice, is like, big heavy meals before bed are not ideal for sleep, unless you're an athlete who's just burning tons of calories, in which case you do need to top off the energy stores. But basically, you got to be cold. And that's one of the main components of sleep hygiene.
That's funny. I naturally like that.
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah. And there's even a trick. They did one study that showed that your sleep latency improves by like 30%. Sleep latency is how long it takes you to fall asleep if you wear wool socks to bed and little else, because what your body does is it shuttles blood back up to your core and cools the rest of your body.
So keep your feet warm, body cold.
Keep your feet warm, the rest of your body stays cold. Yeah. So.
Oh, man, I do the opposite. I actually put my feet out. I don't like socks, and I put my feet out.
I thought you were going to say you put socks on your ears.
Well, on your head. But I cover my head. I actually do. Yeah. I cover my head, and I keep my feet out. I like my feet cool.
You know what's interesting when it comes to covering the head? There's another device that just came out of Stanford a few months ago called an EB. And what they found was that people with racing thoughts, like who have trouble going to bed and falling asleep.
Thinking too much,
They found that if they cooled the frontal cortex, it actually inhibited the racing thoughts. So they developed this device that kind of like that pad I sleep on.
Yeah.
Like circulates cool. super cold water through this little headband. So I'm a side sleeper, though. I tried it out, and every time I roll over, it'd fall off.
So cool idea. I have this problem where I'll wake up at like 3 in the morning. And my mind will instantly start going, what I need to do today, what I need to do. And I start going, and I can't go back to sleep. Or until, you know, 5. So this happens, you know.
Yeah, it's very common. I mean, elephant in the room, of course, is trusting God.
And
Thank you for telling Gabe. He's trusting God.
Right. But I know you're just, so what happens typically, there's different things that happen at different wake times. Like 1 to 2 a.m. is typically hypoglycemia. You just didn't have enough food. And this happens to a lot of people who are fasting, who are on a diet. They'll wake up in those wee hours.
Okay.
And sometimes just using a little bit of something that'll slow bleed into the system before you go to bed, like a little bit of spoonful of almond butter, a little bit of honey on it, that type of thing. Just a slight small snack. Alcohol relates to the sleep time that you're talking about, because alcohol, and the reason that wine settles you down or scotch or whatever before you go to bed, is it's a source of something called gamma-aminobutyric acid. Called GABA. It's
an inhibitory
neurotransmitter. So you got excitatory neurotransmitters, which do what the name implies they do, and then inhibitory neurotransmitters. And alcohol is a source of inhibitory neurotransmitters, but when you flood your system with those before you go to bed, as soon as they wear off, you wake up. It's typically around 3 or 4 a.m.
Oh.
Now, if you could still wake at 3 or 4 a.m. if you're not drinking alcohol, but the trick is you need to somehow get more inhibitory neurotransmitters back into your system.
Yeah.
And there are things, there are natural herbs that do that, like valerian root, chamomile passion flower. Yeah. I'm more of a fan now of like done for you blends. Like I keep one next to my bedstand called LipoCalm, which is just like a bunch of different inhibitory neurotransmitters that you squirt on your tongue. You hold it for like 60 seconds, and then you just kind of feel yourself gradually drift back to sleep because you have that flood of inhibitory neurotransmitters. Hmm. And then your body will make a lot of its own GABA. And this is a cool trick for either falling asleep or falling back asleep when you wake up, if your exhales are longer than your inhales. And so there's this form of breath work a lot of people are a fan of called 4-7-8 breath work, where you breathe in for a 4 count, you hold for a 7 count, then you breathe out for an 8 count, and you can lull yourself to sleep, back to sleep, because of the inhibitory neurotransmitters that makes.
Yeah, I guess maybe you're addressing my problem. My problem is my thoughts just start going 80 miles an hour.
Yeah.
because I, you know,
he said, trust Jesus. What you talking about?
Are you trusting God?
I hope I am.
And then the problem is you pick up your phone to try and download those thoughts, and then you're screwed. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I have a pen next to my bed. It's called a pilot pen. So when you press it, it lights up. And then just like a physical paper diary, if I do need to write down the thoughts that are racing, then I can transcribe those in the morning. But a big part of it is the excitatory neurotransmitters get released. And that's why you have the racing thoughts. So we've got cold. Cold is one.
Okay.
Darkness is another.
Right, cold right here.
And then safety.
You know, darkness is related to the phone thing I was talking about. Like, as dark, like, we have blackout curtains in our room.
Yeah.
My wife and I both, you can Google red phone or red light iPhone trick.
Okay.
And so now, if I had my phone over here, I'd show it to you, but we press a little button on our phones and it sucks all the blue light out of the screen.
Yeah.
So when we're, if we do want to get on our phones at night, it's like we're looking at firelight rather than the bright blue light that keeps you up.
Okay.
We replaced all the bulbs in our bedroom, in our kids' bedroom, and in our master bathroom, you know, in case you get up at night to pee and flip the lights on, with red incandescent bulbs, which simulate torch lights, the nearest of any type of modern bulb that you can get. Mm-hmm. So you're not getting exposed to a bunch of blue light when you're in bed or in your bedroom getting ready, in your bathroom getting ready. So our whole bedroom looks like a, you know, like a nightclub. it's lit up with red light. But it's incredible for sleep because it literally is like the firelight that our ancestors would have experienced at night rather than these bright LED fluorescent lights that science has shown completely shuts down your melatonin production, which is the hormone you want to be able to fall asleep. And then my wife doesn't use one, but I use a sleep mask.
I was going to ask you about that.
I use one called a Mindfold. They originally designed it for plant medicine enthusiasts to be able to journey and block out all the light. But it's also wonderful for anybody who just wants to block out all light.
All light.
And then I have another one. It's like a cocoon for my whole head, and it's got speakers built into the side of it, which is really amazing because I can listen to like relaxing soundscapes. It's called a cocoon. You can look it up on Amazon, But yeah, so darkness would be the second, and related to that, this is something a lot of people don't realize. Your sleep cycle begins in the morning. It begins in the morning. This ties back to the sunlight I was talking about, meaning that you will fall asleep better at night if you get natural sunlight sometime before about 10 a.m. So if you can get outside in bright light, or use one of these like seasonal affective disorder boxes in your office that emit those bright blue lights, get lots of blue light, lots of artificial light, lots of sunlight, whatever form of light you can in the morning, and then just get rid of all that as soon as the sun goes down in whatever area of the world you happen to be in.
I got two more. We gotta go through this.
Okay, go.
Memory. Memory is massive for me.
I only got halfway through sleep, bro.
But Lion's Mane right now is really popular. There's another one that
what?
Lion's Mane?
Yeah, Lion's Mane is cool. You find it in nature. It looks like this. Let me tell about Lion's Mane in a second, but just so we don't leave people hanging.
Yeah.
The other things on sleep would be very simple. Silence, right? Just keep the bedroom quiet or get like a white noise generator. And then safety, meaning that if you, because I used to whenever I check into a hotel, I put my laptop on the bed and plop down on my belly and start to work. If your body or your brain associates your bed with a place of work, then it's not going to feel like a safe place. You'll automatically get some of this fight or flight arousal based response. So no work in bed. If you are going to use your phone,
my wife's going to love that.
Oh man!
What are you doing? Yeah. Not in the bed.
And this happens to a lot of people. They do really, really well with these gravity blankets, which are like heavy blankets that you pull on. I sleep with one.
Yeah,
a 25-pound gravity blanket, and it's one of those breathable.
You're getting like a constant hug.
Oh, it's so amazing. Yeah.
You would like that.
You feel like you're in body armor all night, and you're super
safe. You feel safe.
Yeah. So it's
like a hug.
Darkness, cold, silence, and safety. Now, Lion's Mane. Yeah, Lion's Mane is cool.
Okay, we're talking about memory. Memory now?
Okay. See, I remembered we were going to talk about memory. Lion's Mane looks like a cluster of axons and dendrites when you find it in nature, which are all these little...
Explain that for me.
So axons and dendrites are nerve cells. Like they're all the little clusters of nerve cells. When you see the brain, it's got the sprouts coming off it and little wires.
Okay.
So that's what Lion's Mane looks like.
Okay.
It tastes fantastic, like with a little olive oil and salt and pepper. And
so it's an herb?
It's a mushroom.
It's a mushroom.
But now a lot of companies are harvesting it and using it in like nootropics and smart drugs, et cetera, because of its effect on memory. Mm. This is why I think God is just such a freaking cool creator, because there's this whole idea of doctrine of signatures, meaning things that you find in nature
right.
actually look like the function that they have in the human body. So if you look,
it's like
if,
God was like,
right,
brain.
Right. So if you look at mushroom. If you look at walnuts and you crack them open, yeah. they've got a lot of choline in them, which is wonderful for brain function.
Okay.
And they look like a little brain.
A little
when you
brain.
Crack them open. Eggs are actually really good for your eyes, as are carrots. And when you slice a carrot and you hold it up, it looks like an eye. You crack open an egg in a pan.
Looks like an eye.
Looks like an eye. Yeah. Pomegranates, tomatoes, you cut them open and they actually look, if you cut them the right way, like the ventricles and the atria of the heart. And they're wonderful for cardiovascular function. avocados are actually good for libido and for what's called the Leydig cell function in men, which is your testicular function.
Yeah. Wow.
And they look like little testicles when they're hanging.
Yeah.
And so it's really interesting how God has given us all these clues. Probably the most interesting one is there's this little known shrub called a Spilanthes. And it actually is known as insulin for the heart. And it's one of the best things you can do for patients who have coronary artery issues. I interviewed a cardiovascular physician about this.
Okay.
And you look at that one, and it's got all these tiny, tiny little red vessels coming off of this white flower.
Wow.
And a lot of folks, even in cardiovascular medicine, don't even know about this flower.
Wow.
That's what it does. So it's cool how God gives us clues. But yeah, lion's mane is wonderful for memory. Probably the other one, there's two others that are up there.
Please
one,
speak, Pratt.
One is Ginkgo biloba.
Yes.
And then the other one is Bacopa monnieri.
Knox's dad taught him all this.
Yeah, I know that last one.
But Bacopa, it's fantastic.
Say it again.
For memory, Bacopa monnieri, Monnieri.
So what are those?
Those are also herbs. That are good for specifically when we're talking about nootropics and smart drugs. You can talk about executive function, memory, word recall, et cetera. But yeah. those are specifically good for memory, for recall.
Does Keon sell any of this memory stuff?
No. Oh. We'll eventually do something like a nootropic or smart drug formula.
What's the stuff that...
We sell coffee.
Yeah, I know that. I know that.
The world's favorite drug. See, we never do.
Joe Rogan, he has I can't remember what the name of his is called, but he has a memory.
Yeah, Alpha Brain. Yeah,
so who's this guy?
Joe Rogan?
Alpha Brain has a boatload of the walnut stuff in it, the choline.
Okay.
Form of it called acetylcholine, which is actually really good. When you're thinking hard, thinking fast, writing, et cetera, your brain burns through its choline stores. Mm-hmm. Far more readily. When you're drinking coffee, stimulants, energy drinks, et cetera, you also burn through a lot of choline. So it's just like giving the fire a little bit more wood.
Okay. Yeah. So what would you, like lion's mane or would you, something like Alpha Brain?
Lion's mane blends really well with anything that is a blood flow precursor, like beetroot, niacin,
Gotacola,
cordyceps. Gotacola actually is good for blood flow. Think of like your pre workouts that you would normally take to like give you a pump.
Yeah, pre workout. Yeah,
you blend those with lion's mane. There's a local mushroom harvester named Paul Stamets, and he actually I've used this formula before. It works really well. You actually use
Your screens went out.
Things breaking.
Yeah.
It's
okay. We're just going. I think I just unplugged it.
They turned on the hair blower downstairs.
Yeah, they did.
anyway, yeah, keep going. The local mushroom guy.
What he found is a really good stack, and I've used it. You use a very, very small amount of psilocybin extract, like tiny, tiny amount. You mix that with the lion's mane, and then you add your blood flow precursor to that. And that one for everything from memory, cognition, sensory perception, it's a fantastic blend. That one can't be sold legally, but those two mushrooms work really well together.
Wow.
Is it because there's actually psychiatric or psychotic elements to the mushrooms?
Psilocybin causes neuronal growth, what's called neuronal plasticity, where you actually create new synapses. Mm-hmm. The lion's mane strengthens those synapses, and then whatever blood flow precursor you use, like niacin, delivers more blood flow to the brain.
Mm.
So they all three are working on a different mechanism of action. Mm-hmm. So it's actually a really good stack.
So there's no psychosis elements to it. Why is it illegal?
Well, I mean, you'd have to, because psilocybin is illegal, because it does have, at higher doses, a hallucinogenic component.
Okay, last thing for me, I think.
Okay.
Because
I got a question.
Okay.
I'm letting you go.
Okay, so we got sleep, super important. I think sleep connects to memory. Those two things, reset and getting started fresh again, getting a good, and that connects, but energy. So right now, coffee and supplements and energy
Red Bull.
Drinks are out there.
Yeah.
How are you working through? Like, coffee's great. Like, yeah, do it for sure. Or is like, what's another? Is there something?
Red Bull and vodka up and down.
they just did a study last week showing that caffeine accelerates the reward mechanism that you get from alcohol. meaning that if you're mixing Red Bull and vodka, it's going to make you really, really want another one. So and that study just came out. The thing about energy drinks is it's highly dependent on genetics. So now that 23andMe and everything is around, we know some people metabolize coffee really fast. Like, yeah. I'm one of those people. It's just in and out of the system.
Yeah.
I can have a shot of espresso with dinner.
I can go to sleep.
It still impacts your deep sleep levels, so you don't memory consolidate and learn as well.
I feel the same way with stuff like that.
And some people are slow oxidizers, where you have a cup of coffee at 10 a.m. and it's still in your system when you're trying to go to bed at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
So it depends on your genetics. And with a lot of these, it also depends on what they're blended with. You know, we know coffee now has a lot of mold and mycotoxins and other substances in it that dictate that you'd want to go, if you can, with a clean version of a bean. With something like an energy drink, you want to look at the label and look for a good sweetener, like stevia or monk fruit or something that's not going to impact the gut or the nervous system, like acesulfame potassium or sucralose or something like that. But usually it's the delivery mechanism and the ingredients that are adulterating the substance than the substance itself, assuming you're using it responsibly.
That's excellent. This is your lane, isn't it?
We don't ever let you.
My dad would be so proud of me right now. I never get to talk about stuff like this.
But here is one other cool thing about coffee. This is why I've been sending a lot of people to my mom's coffee shop to buy decaf.
Yeah.
Is what happens is coffee, its molecular structure in your body looks very, very similar to the molecule that makes you sleepy, called adenosine. And so coffee will lock into these adenosine receptors, and what your body does so that adenosine can actually work properly at night to make you fall asleep is it makes a whole bunch more adenosine receptors. So you need more and more adenosine to flood your system in order for you to get tired at night. Even if you're like one of those fast coffee people, even if you're drinking it in the morning, not drinking it afternoon, et cetera, but it only takes 7 to 10 days for your body to downregulate all those receptors. So every month or two, what you do is you switch to drinking decaf only for about a week, reset the whole system, and you remain sensitive to your coffee, to your caffeine.
That makes sense.
I'm not sensitive to caffeine.
And during that time, you just switch to cigarettes, baby.
I get niacin straight up, right? Yep.
Ben, you know, Ben and I worked together at your mom's coffee shop. Do you remember this?
Didn't you work at Zumi's too?
I did. Did you work at the bakery?
Yeah, we were serving. We were serving like croque monsieur and eclairs to people.
Yeah, I was baking bread,
and then I would go across the street in the afternoon and train them at the gym.
Oh, you did?
It was a perfect gig.
Yeah, give them pastries and then make them work out and have them pay you to burn them off. This is your eclair, man. Yeah. Go again.
Yeah.
No. Your mom. I go in regularly and get my coffee at Bootser's, but your mom likes to remind me of when you wrapped me in saran wrap,
I remember
and sprayed like whipped cream all over me or something. That was my last day or something.
Punking you. Yeah, it was your last day.
Yeah, we're punking you.
We snuck up behind you with the giant industrial size saran wrapped him. And then, I think we did whipped cream.
I think your mom has that picture like on her phone ready to go, and she just shows it to people. And she says, isn't that funny? That like, look at Pastor Toby now.
I want to see that picture.
So basically,
what I'm saying is, you know, there's like deep down in here, there's like a little bit of a grudge, you know?
Here comes the saran wrap.
No. So I want to turn a little bit and talk a little bit culturally again, real quick. And I don't know how long are we going.
We've way passed our time.
Need to go here pretty soon.
Okay, Gabe's got to go.
So we've gone long.
So, anyways, obviously we agree that the spiritual health is the most important thing. And I'm looking out at our world. I mean, the reason why we are running as fast as we can down this gutter of chaos, of insanity.
Yeah.
So abortion, sexual insanity, economic insanity, political insanity, I mean, COVID insanity. I mean, I don't know, you know.
Insanity. Anyways,
ultimately, we can't deal with this rightly because we're not right with God.
Yeah.
Right.
Back to your own testimony of sorts. I mean, when you live for the flesh, you destroy everything around you.
That's right.
Okay.
Right.
And so it's only when you live for God and you are in Christ and you're driven by his word and by his spirit that you're able to think clearly and see clearly and discern clearly what's wisdom and what's good and what's righteous.
Right.
Okay. At the same time, I don't want to divorce that from our physical
taking care of our bodies.
Life, either. And several times you've talked about how being good stewards of our body also is about thinking clearly. Mm-hmm. So we know that the spiritual is more important and so forth. But are we becoming idiots because we're so out of shape?
Well, there's this guy named Joe Biden. Mama dog, dog, cats, banana pants.
Do you see what I'm asking, though? Do you see what I'm asking?
I see what you're asking. And I mean, like, the short and stupid answer is yes. We know there's a gut-brain connection that dictates that what you put in your body, meaning including even something as simple and seemingly ridiculous as gluten, even if you don't have celiac disease, causes neural inflammation that gives you fuzzy thinking the next day. So there's all sorts of problematic issues between the gut and the brain.
But I love gluten.
No more gluten.
Right.
I ask for extra gluten.
But Jesus said, break my body. Given
that's why
you.
I have a big bottle of gluten. Biohacking. I got a big bottle of Gluten Guardian in my bag. It's dipeptidopeptidase. Turns gluten to soup. So if I'm going to go over to Bootsers and have panini, I'll pop six of those. And that's just better living through science.
What's it called?
It's called Gluten Guardian.
Because good, I don't want to become a liberal.
And I and also, my wife makes bread every week, but it's slow fermented sourdough bread. So it ferments, digests the gluten.
So, but how does being a good steward of your body and studying the way God made the world and trying to live in accordance with those natural laws that we find there, how does that affect our ability to think clearly?
It primarily comes down to the fact that if there were two things that I was going to do to be healthier, two metrics I were going to track.
Okay.
Number one would be blood glucose, and specifically something called glycemic variability, the extent to which my blood glucose goes up and down during the day.
Okay.
And that's where the low-level physical activity during the day comes in that I talked about. That's where cold and heat can help to stabilize that.
Okay.
That's where just fasting and self-awareness, or at least some amount of discipline around the amount of sugar and packaged foods that you eat during the day, comes into play. And I often wear a continuous blood glucose monitor. I can track, you know, what things are doing. So I just kind of know.
Okay.
But that's not necessarily for cognition, even though there's a little bit of a corollary, but more just for general health. The other component that I would track is inflammation. And inflammation is the biggest contributor to chronic, way, way greater than sugar. I mean, if you were to come up to me, Gabe, and offer me a stick of cotton candy or a corn dog, I'd take the cotton candy 9 times out of 10, 10 times out of 10, because that's just glucose. I can go walk that off. I can go bench press. I can go burn it, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. The vegetable oil, the safflower oil, sunflower oil, you know, corn oil.
Your body just processes that.
Your body uses that to make all its cells, but it also produces inflammation. And when we're talking about inflammation, inflammation is not just like neck blow, right? It includes your brain. And in addition to that, those same oils are used to comprise membranes in the body. And we all have this thing, we've probably heard of that, we have a barrier between our gut and our bloodstream, a single cell lining barrier called the gut-blood barrier. You also have a brain-blood barrier. And so anytime you're consuming these things that would disintegrate the integrity of that barrier, anything else you're consuming, large proteins, metals, molecules, toxins, et cetera, those are going to cross the blood-brain barrier and affect your cognitive potential, your ability to be able to, whatever, you know, preach a sermon, read God's word without falling asleep at night. I mean, you know, pray to God with flowing poetic words that you might not be able to recall if you've been, whatever, shoving gluten and vegetable oil in your face all day. So it sounds silly, you know, and there is a certain extent where you just need to, like, you know, trust God and eat what looks good at the church potluck. But at the same time, we do need to use wisdom and discernment and arguably even some amount of self-control. I think that you can make an argument that there is a tendency towards gluttony in many Christian people, the same way that there is in non-Christian people. And it's not because they're trying not to be that you know that picky liberal non-Christian who won't eat gluten. It's because they actually have an addiction to highly palatable foods. Right. And
don't have self-discipline, don't have self-control.
Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Self-control is a gift of the spirit. I just saw Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away. We're recording this on Friday. She passed away. So we're in for some excitement.
Oh, wow. My goodness.
That was a good time to be praying for our nation.
So we need to be thinking clearly. We need to be in God's word. We need to be fellowshipping with God's people at church. And we need to be taking care of our bodies so that we can serve Christ faithfully.
Yeah.
It's been great talking to you, Ben.
What's the website that we can check you out at? How do we keep track of you
and follow you? BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
Wow. That's it.
Hey, I just want to say one last closing thought here, man. I really have been encouraged in seeing you live out your Christian faith more over the last number of years. I've seen it, and it's been awesome, and it's been really cool to see you, man.
Dude, thank you. Work. And it is the most rewarding and fulfilling. These are the most rewarding and fulfilling years of my life I've ever lived. I'm
praise God.
Close to my family, close to my kids, in full union with God. It's absolutely amazing. God is good.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen.
Yeah.
Amen. Praise God.
Thank you again for being on the show, Ben. You want to be here for another 3 hours? Okay. If you're single, get married. If you're married, have kids. If you have kids,
put the red lights on.
Go baptize them. Until next week, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Go fight, laugh, and feast. This is Cross Politic. Be praying for your nation right now.
You know, when you baptize babies, they're actually healthier long-term. Long-term.
Baptized, the cold,
isn't that right?
The cold baptism?
Only in Gerald Steiner or Pellegrino.
Yes!
Oh, that's great.
What are those fools doing? Now, when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the walls of Christendom, he was greatly enraged, and he jeered. What are those fools doing? Can they restore all these ruins themselves? Will they sacrifice? Do they think they can finish in a day? Will they revive the charred and shattered stones out of the heaps of rubbish? And the priests of modern decay laughed, saying, if so much as a fox goes up on their wall, he will break down their city. So we built our walls, for the people had a mind to work. And in the ruins of the West, we laid our foundations. From that day on, half of us worked on construction, and half held the spears, shields, bows, and coats of mail. And those who carried burdens were trained to labor on the work with one hand and hold a weapon to defend it with the other. And all had a sword strapped to their sides and a tool in their hands. In the ruins we live, even while we rebuild them. In the ruins we marry and make love and raise children who raise the walls. In the ruins we craft wine and raise sanctuaries and barns. In the ruins we build and we film and we write and we read and we sing and we laugh and play rugby with pumpkins. In the ruins we raise our hands with swords and shovels and bless the Lord, for the earth is His and all who dwell therein. And each day, by His grace, we are less ruined. Each day our walls and our loves and our songs grow taller. For the city is a living city, and we are living stones.